Okay. Good morning, everybody. This is BIO-231, Human Anatomy, September 14th. We're going to get into the introductory chapter to bones today. And you see the slide on the right. That is Serena Williams. She was supposed to have a big weekend and win something that hasn't been won in like 50 years, but she got beat before the very last match, unfortunately. But she's still probably the best women's tennis player ever anyway. Okay. So that's the first picture in your textbook. And we're going to move to skeleton really soon, but we have an announcement from SI first. Okay. And it is exam one review, 12:30 to 2:30. 306. That's up on the third floor. Business building. It's not. It's on the other side of campus, but campus is not very large, so it's not very far away. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. That helps a lot. All right. So before we get started, you can take a picture of that. I won't erase it. Take a picture of it after class. I just want to look at the schedule. Where's the schedule? Here's the schedule. Can I bring it over this way? I sure can. And so today, I did say, was the 14th. We're going to look at chapter 6 today. Actually, we're going to complete chapter 6. And then next time, the 16th, this is your first lecture exam. Chapters 1, 2, 4, 5, and 6. And I won't be on campus Wednesday, but I'll have a substitute come in and hand the tests out to you. And when you turn your test in, show me your picture ID, because that's one of the things that you have to have. And it doesn't matter. It cannot be a Disneyland ID. Okay? It can't be a Visa card with your picture on it unless you give it to who's ever going to proctor the exam. It should be a driver's license or a Cypress or Fullerton College. And the best thing is a Cypress or Fullerton College, because then you'd be able to use all the resources in the library with that identification, right? Okay. So you need a Scantron, 882E or 882ES. Does anyone have a 882E that they can kind of hold up so that everybody can see it? I don't know, might be kind of, oh, here's a bunch. What color are they? Green. Yeah, the green ones, right. Pencil, and you got to have a super eraser. Make sure that eraser works on there. On the Scantron, please put what lab you have, right, because there's four different classes in here. I won't be able to grade the tests if I've got to sort everybody's Scantron into the particular sections. And on the table, I'll have four different piles for the four different labs. Put your exam in the correct pile. And let's see, I've got meetings on Friday here on campus, so I'll be able to grade them on Friday. All right, so you're going to have to wait just a little while, but for sure by the weekend. And then the week after, the 21st, that's for people that have lab on Monday, that's your first practicum. And then the 23rd is a Wednesday. For those of you who have Wednesday lab, that's when you're going to have your first practicum. And who can tell me what labs are going to be tested on for practicum one? 1, 2, and 3. Yeah, 1, 2, and 3. And I think that says that down if we look over here. Okay, so lab 1, 2, and 3 are on practicum number 1. And how do you prepare for a practical exam in lab? Your lab manual is the answer key to all the possible questions that could be on the practicum. And so another good question I have is, how do you prepare for a lecture exam? How do you prepare for a lecture exam? Yeah, the exam study guide. Now, where's the exam study guide? Blackboard, all right, Blackboard. Help me find this. So I'm in anatomy class right here, 10340. Don't know which one that is. Pre-lecture reading assignments. Exam study guides. That's what you should be looking at. Okay, you can print these out. They're not in any particular order, but they are labeled. So here's the exam study guide for chapter 1. And the page numbers in this study guide should be exactly the same as what you find in Blackboard under the weekly assignments. There are end of chapter questions that I like that are listed for you. Not every single question at the end of the chapter, right, but just the ones that are listed. There are online questions that you can zip out to a website and practice answering questions, but not every single question on that website, just the ones that I have listed. And you can get feedback immediately when you submit. You don't have to submit to me those practice tests. And you can get feedback right away for the end of chapter questions. How are you going to check your answers for end of chapter questions? At the end of the book, in the appendix, right? So check your answers with that. And then don't forget exam figures. Not every figure in a chapter could be an exam figure, but I have them listed, and I even put them in the exam study guide with all the labels erased and just practice labeling them. And most people, if you apply yourself, can get 100% on that part of the exam. Most of us are pretty good visual learners, not everybody, but most of us are pretty good, right? And then if you apply your understanding of those pictures to the multiple choice questions and you practice the multiple choice questions, then I think you can be in pretty good shape for the lecture exam. All right, so anybody have a question on how to prepare for the lecture exam coming up? It is the exam study guide for the ones that we talked about, right? 1, 2, 4, 5, and 6, skipping chapter 3, and all that information is right here. Okay, that works for me. So let's get to the next chapter. Here's the sign-in sheet. Go ahead, get that started. You will not have a sign-in sheet on Wednesday, okay, because usually on test days I don't have a sign-in sheet. Okay, any questions on what could be on the practicum or lecture exam or any of that kind of stuff? Question about what we've gone over so far? Mitosis. What's the purpose of mitosis? Growth. I heard growth. I like that. And replace old and damaged cells. Nice. That was like way back one of the first chapters. All right, so all this is fantastic. All right, so let's go to today's material. And here it is. Right here. No, we don't want axial skeleton. We want the introductory chapter. Okay, I'll get to it in just a second. Let me switch the monitors around. Really difficult for me. So skeletons. Chapter 6. This looks like it's it. Okay. Well, first we want to know what the skeletal system is all about. What are the components of the skeletal system? Let me pull up this graphic and let me put it over here where it belongs. Okay, nice. Okay, so the components of the skeletal system, right? That's what we see right here. All right, bones and skeletal tissue. And you don't need to make Serena any bigger. Okay, components. You have bones. Of course, everybody would kind of know bones, part of the skeletal system. But let's not forget there are some things that look like bones, but they're a lot lighter, which is an advantage. They have a lot of shape. Some of these things are actually bendable, and when you release them, they go back to their original shape, and that is cartilage. So cartilage can take a shape of a bone, it gives your body structure, but it's not nearly as heavy. All right, if all of the cartilage in our body was made out of bone, we would be a lot heavier and we'd have to consume a lot more calories just to haul all that extra mass around. So that's one important thing. And also ligaments are part of the skeletal system. A ligament is dense, regular connective tissue, so there's a chemical between the cells. And does anybody know what chemical that is between all the cells and the dense, regular connective tissue that gives that? I saw it. It's collagen. Yeah, collagen fibers produced by fibroblasts. And a ligament in particular is a bone-to-bone connection. Not a bone-to-muscle, but a bone-to-bone connection. And that is a ligament. Does anybody know what a bone-to-muscle connection is? That is a tendon. I heard tendon someplace. And it is exactly the same kind of tissue. It's a dense, regular connective tissue, but it has a different name because it's attaching two different things together. And just for fun, All right, a tendon connects a muscle to a bone, and in particular, what kind of muscle? What kind of muscle would that be? This goes back to the tissues chapter. What kind of muscle is that going to be? Skeletal muscle, because it connects that muscle to the skeleton. Okay, so yeah, it's really nice and easy if you just think about it like that. All right, so what are some functions of bone? Oh, this is going to be really difficult. Okay, oh, so here I see a nice skeleton, right? So here are some bones in this nice beige color. And in the blue, that's a certain kind of cartilage. That's hyaline cartilage, doesn't have fibers. And then there's some really strong kinds of cartilages, and that looks like a red color to me. That's fibrocartilage, so it's loaded with collagen in the matrix. And then there are some elastic cartilages. Like I hope you can see maybe the ear, external ear, has some elastic cartilages. So there are different kinds of cartilages in your body. Functions, right? Support is an important function. And bone is very solid. There are some minerals that make bone really strong. It resists compression. And so bone can't compress, so we say that it supports your body. You can put a lot of weight on bone and it's not going to collapse. So bone is rigid and strong. It can bear great weight. Cartilage, on the other hand, is firm but flexible. But it gives the body some structure, like you find in your nose, your ear, your rib cage. And during development, a lot of our bones in our body are modeled with in cartilage in the shape of what the bone should be like later on in life. So it's a nice model for how a bone should develop. Rib cage has cartilage. If we look at the rib cage over here, right, and that's really important because in order to inhale and exhale, the rib cage has to expand and then collapse. And the bending of all these cartilages right here allows for the thoracic cavity to enlarge and to go back to its original shape. All right, so support is one thing. Protection is another. We looked in lab, three labs so far have looked at the skull in lab, and we noticed that the skull is armor plating for a very important soft tissue, a soft tissue organ inside your body. And what is it armor plating for? Your brain. That's right. Your brain doesn't have any bones in it, doesn't have much in the way of connective tissue. On the outside, some strong stuff, but none on the inside. So the skull is important for protecting the brain. And if I look at the rib cage over here, it's not a solid bone like the cranium, but there are sufficient bones that prevent penetration of outside objects into the thoracic cavity. So what does the rib cage protect? Lungs, really important organ. Your heart, this is true. Plus, there's some other things that are just as important. There are great vessels attached to the heart, and there's a thymus gland in there. All of those things are really important. The last one is the vertebral column, where you see the cursor running up and down the body. Right? It's a little bit more movable than the cranium, right? But nonetheless, there's still a bunch of joints between each of these vertebrae. The vertebral column is slightly movable, but again, it is armor plating. And what is the organ inside the vertebral column that the vertebral column is protecting? The spinal cord. That's right. So the central nervous system is made up of the brain, which the skull protects, and the spinal cord, which the vertebral column protects. All right. Another thing for the skeletal system is movement. All right. Muscles attach to bones via tendons, and when that muscle contracts, it moves these bones together. Because a skeletal muscle can only pull. It can only pull bones together. A muscle can't push on anything. Right? Sometimes we can push on objects, and that's because of different lever systems that operate in our body, but a muscle can only pull, can never push. And there are joints that where bones come together. Sometimes we call that an articulation. And when a muscle is attached to either bone on either side of that joint, then that joint will bend and will bring those bones together. And then lastly, movement. Ligaments, right, are bone-to-bone connections. And a job of a ligament is to limit motion between these two bones or even prevent motion between these two different bones. In lab, we're going to look at some sutures. It's a type of joint in the skull. And have you ever seen anybody's skull wiggling around? No. Okay, because there are ligaments between those bones that really anchor the bones together. Right? And then, for instance, there's a ligament between the bones in your forearm that limit the range of motion of these bones in your forearm, but they don't prevent them all together. It just limits it so that it behaves properly. Okay, so sometimes ligaments prevent motion, other times they just limit that motion. Bones are also a reservoir for certain kinds of compounds. Like the CA right here stands for calcium. And in particular, you're going to see this 2+. That means it's an ion, right, which can dissolve in water inside your body. Right? And this calcium ion is stored in your bones. So that calcium makes bones strong. That's one of its functions. Does anybody else know a function of calcium? I don't think so, because we haven't taken many classes yet. That's part of what we have to look at in this class. Right? And is it important to have proper levels of calcium in your bones, would you say? I see a lot of people shaking their heads, and this is true. Some people don't have proper levels of calcium in their bones, and that's a disease process. Does anybody know what that is called? Osteoporosis. That's right. As we get older, our bones lose calcium. They demineralize. They get smaller and weaker. And as we get older, they're very easy to break as a result of that. I'll talk about that some more. Okay, but nonetheless, bones are a storage place for calcium. In case there's some other process in your body that requires calcium, it can go to bones to get it. Along with calcium, there is something called PO4. P stands for phosphorus. That O is oxygen, like an H2O. If these elements are put together in this form, we call that inorganic phosphate. Sometimes it's just capital P and then little I right here. It's calcium and this inorganic phosphate that get put together to make bones really strong. So not just calcium, but some phosphate as well, inorganic phosphate. And the other thing that is stored in bones, there are spaces inside bones, and those spaces never go to waste. It's filled with adipose connective tissue. And what can you tell me about adipose connective tissue? It's fat, I heard fat. Yeah, so it's a way for your body to store energy. There's a lot of energy in fat, and it's stored inside bones. And in particular, the deep part of bone, sometimes we call it a medullary cavity. That's where we find bone marrow. And you know what? You got two different kinds of bone marrow. You got yellow and red. Yellow stores fat. Red bone marrow makes red blood cells, which is our last item right here. Blood cell production. Sometimes we call this hemopoiesis. Hemopoiesis is the production of blood cells. And these cavities, if they don't contain fat, then they're called red bone marrow. And red bone marrow produces red blood cells and platelets. And red blood cells carry oxygen in our blood to all the different organs in our body. So what is a hemopoietic tissue? What is its job? Hemopoietic tissue is a tissue that can make red blood cells. And remember in lab I said we lose between 1 and 2 million red blood cells every second. So what does that mean? So what has to happen so you do not become anemic? You got to make 1 to 2 million red blood cells every second. So you're really busy all the time. What kind of tissue replaces all of those red blood cells that die every second in your body? What kind of tissue does that? A? Hemopoietic tissue, right? Hemopoietic tissue. And you know that now to be in red bone marrow. All right, so those are all the functions of the skeletal system. Let's look at cartilage. Let's get that out of the way first. Right? Types of cartilage, we got three kinds. When we were in the tissue chapter, we looked at all three of these underneath the microscope. These could be on your practicum in, what, a week? Yeah, because your lecture exam is next time. But your practicum will be in a week from today if you're in a Monday lab. Hyaline cartilage, right? Elastic cartilage and fibrocartilage in order of strength. Hyaline cartilage doesn't have any fibers. It just has ground substance, which can hold a lot of water, but it's not particularly strong. There are certain living cells inside cartilage, and what are the names of cells that we find in cartilage? Chondrocytes, that's right. Anytime you hear that word chondro, you should think of a cartilage something, model, cartilage cell. And these chondrocytes live in a little bubble or pit that we call a lacunae. right? And there's another tissue that has those two, and that is bone. But all three kinds of cartilage have lacunae with chondrocytes in them. Where do we find hyaline cartilage? Probably one that you might recognize and use immediately is articulations or joints. If we look on the slide on the right, I see all this blue, and here is, what does this look like a joint to you where this blue is? What joint is this right here? Elbow joint, yeah. Okay, and here is a hip joint, hyaline cartilage. Hyaline cartilage protects the ends of bone so that they don't rub up against each other and grind each other down. But there's some other places where we find hyaline cartilage, for instance, in our nose and in our windpipe. That's what we call the trachea. Okay, larynx we're going to get to. Costal, right, means rib cage. Elastic cartilage, similar to hyaline cartilage, but it has elastic fibers. Epiglottis and ear are really good examples, and you can actually manipulate your ear. You can bend your ear and let go, and it's going to flop back to its original shape. When you swallow something, there's a special part in a part of your body we call the larynx, and it's a trapdoor. When you swallow something, this trapdoor closes over the airway that you use for breathing, so food doesn't get into your trachea or airway. It slides past it and then goes down into your stomach. So the epiglottis is elastic cartilage. It's very bendable as well. And fibrocartilage. Tell me something about fibrocartilage. Is it the strongest or the weakest kind of cartilage? It's the strongest. And why is that obvious to you guys that mentioned that? What does it have?
Collagen.
It has collagen. That's right. A very strong fiber. And is that collagen intracellular or extracellular? Collagen. Extracellular, because it is found in the matrix of a connective tissue, right? All right, so fibrocartilage resists compression and tension. Okay, compression is squeezing when you try to squeeze something down. What the heck is this force that we call tension? If compression is squeezing something down, tension is trying to pull something apart. Right, so collagen is fantastic. It's these fibers that resist pulling apart. It can resist tension. Okay, intervertebral discs like what I see over here, okay, contain fibrocartilage. There is a particular part. There's like a ring on the outside. We call the annulus fibrosus, right, and that's the special part of an intervertebral disc that is particularly strong. And also, have you ever heard of a knee meniscus? Probably, right? And the knee menisci are fibrocartilage as well, because these knees are holding up basically all of your body weight, and you have fibrocartilage between the bones in your thigh and your leg, and so that has to be a nice strong type of cartilage as well. All right, let's look at some types of bones. Types of bones. Oh, here's some pretty good pictures of cartilage. Hyaline cartilage, elastic, fibrocartilage, look at all that collagen in there. Okay, types of bones. By their shape, sometimes we understand a bone by its shape. A long bone, a good example of a long bone is going to be the humerus. And the humerus has a the length, okay, of a long bone is long in one dimension and relatively short in the other two. So in this particular dimension, from head to toe, it's really long, but from anterior to posterior and right and left, the distance is really, really small. So this is a really good example of a long bone. And here is a flat bone, the sternum. Okay, it almost looks like a long bone, but there's another dimension that is pretty large, right? From left to the right is pretty large, but from anterior to posterior, this bone is really thin. So this is a flat bone. A short bone, for instance, some bones that make up your ankle are really, really short, kind of funny shaped, but no matter how you look at it, it just kind of has this irregular shape to it, and it's just really, really short. Then we have an irregular shaped bone because it has a whole bunch of these processes sticking off of it, and maybe holes and notches in it. A vertebrae is an example of irregular bone. And what I don't see pulled out on this slide is a bone that's completely surrounded by tendon. Most bones will connect to other bones via a joint, but there are some bones that are surrounded by a tendon, and a really nice obvious example would be the patella, or your kneecap. That's found within a tendon that goes from the muscles of your thigh that attach to your leg, down below it. There's a couple other places we might find a sesamoid bone, and your thumb would be a good example, and then sometimes they pop up in tendons where they don't usually, where they're not usually found, but sometimes they develop as a result of irritation. If somebody has a continuous use injury to a tendon, it can calcify and a bone can form in there. All right, so those are types of bones. Here is kind of a trick question. So we can see that the humerus is a long bone, right? In one dimension, it's very long, and the other two, it's kind of short. Now let's take a look at this bone right here. Here are some bones in the hand. These are very small bones, but are they long bones or not? Yes, right? These are what we call phalanges. Phalanges are long bones, even though they're small, right? They're long bones because in one direction, right, they're large, and in the other two, like right and left, anterior, posterior, the distance is very short, right? So a long bone doesn't have to be big, like a humerus or a radius and an ulna, right? It's only that in one dimension that they are long, and in the other two, they're relatively short. All right, so we like to understand a lot about bones, so we're going to use a long bone right here as a way to think about how all bones are put together. So here's a nice long bone. We're going to look at a humerus. So here is a humerus. You can't identify it as a humerus just yet. That's okay, because when we get into the chapter, you'll be able to recognize it. But here is a long bone, and it's been cut open. All right, so I can see the outside. I can even see some of the inside. So let's start talking about a long bone. The ends of a long bone are called the epiphyses, or one is an epiphysis. Notice that the word's got a little swing to it. That might help you spell it out a little bit later. Can you say epiphysis? Epiphysis, yeah, that's going to help you with spelling. The proximal epiphysis is the end of a long bone that is attached to, more closely attached to some center part of your body, right? Proximal epiphysis. And then the other end of a long bone that's farther away from some center attachment point is called the distal epiphysis. And all of that part of the bone in between the epiphyses is what we call the diaphysis. So you might want to say that out loud too, diaphysis. Yeah, diaphysis. And there's another name for diaphysis. Sometimes you call it the shaft of a long bone. So diaphysis and shaft pretty much are the same thing. Okay, I would give credit for both, but diaphysis sounds a lot more scientific, so I like that. All right, surrounding the bone, there is a membrane. And if we look way over here to part C of the illustration, something is pulling this membrane off the bone, and that is called the periosteum. Peri means surrounding something, and anytime you hear that word osteo, osteum, you should think of bone, right? Periosteum is this membrane that surrounds the bone. All right, so there's the periosteum. And I can see this big cavity inside the humerus. We call that the medullary cavity. And we call it the medullary cavity because the deep part of any organ is what we call the medulla. All right, so here's the deep part of the bone. That's the medulla, and that's where the cavity is. So it's the deep part of the bone, medullary cavity. The more superficial parts of the bone, right, and the superficial part of any organ is called the cortex, right? So cortex is superficial, medulla is deep, and I don't see any cavities in cortical bone or right on the surface. As we get down deeper into the bone, I see a cavity, but sometimes I might see a whole bunch of tiny spaces, a lot smaller spaces. If we look at that part, you see it looks like a sponge. Right, and sometimes we do call that spongy bone. And if we look at the cortical bone, it is solid. We call that compact bone. So sometimes we can use all of those words together. Right. So spongy or medullary bone is the same thing. Compact or cortical bone is the same thing. Right? So one describes what its structure is, the other is a way of just talking about where you find it in a bone. Right, spongy bone versus compact bone. And in the medullary cavity, I see some bone marrow right here. What kind of bone marrow does that look like to you? Looks like yellow bone marrow. So that is adipose connective tissue, storing energy for us. All right, let me zoom back out right to here. So here's the proximal epiphysis. And notice, I see a line going between these two different compartments of spongy bone. And this is what we're going to call the epiphyseal line. What's the epiphysis of a bone again? The epiphysis, as opposed to diaphysis. The epiphysis are the ends or the tips of a long bone. So here is a line. Kind of looks like there's solid bone in here. That's an exception to that rule that I was talking about. And during development, this right here forms a plate. So it's a three-dimensional structure that goes all the way across, forwards and backwards, right and left, anterior, posterior, and it's made out of cartilage. In particular, hyaline cartilage. And so this is the area that a bone will grow in length at the epiphyseal plate, right? And when we become adults, that epiphyseal plate hardens over or ossifies and becomes solid bone. And when it becomes solid bone, then the bone can't grow in length anymore. Right, so that's the importance of this epiphyseal plate. The other thing to realize is, what is the strength of solid bone that I see right here compared to hyaline cartilage? Which one is stronger? Bone is stronger. Hyaline cartilage is pretty weak. So that when somebody is growing, okay, it's easy to damage this epiphyseal plate because it's only made out of hyaline cartilage. And then if that epiphyseal plate is damaged, this bone will stop growing in length as a result of that. And if you damage a bone on one side of your body and not the other, guess what happens? One side of your body gets taller and the other side doesn't. And so if that happens to a leg, then you might have to have shoes with different thicknesses of soles, right? So that will balance your gait out once again. All right, so how is it very easy to damage this epiphyseal plate when you're a youngster? How would you? It can either be due to compression, when you squeeze the bone down, and something else, twisting. If you twist one of these bones, hyaline cartilage can't resist twisting. And we call that torsion. So we got compression for pushing together, tension for pulling apart, and twisting is what we call torsion. So how can a young person hurt one of their long arms, or long bones? By compression. Probably all, we've all done this. I'm thinking of being on a swing set, right? And you get on a swing and you swing back and forth, and you go, oh, this is kind of fun. So you swing a little bit more, right? You start swinging really high up in the air, and that's really fun. So you do it some more, so you're swinging really, really, get really high up in the air, right? And then you swing back down, and then you try to get up even higher. And then what's really fun to do when you've maxed out on how high you can go? Yeah, you let go at the height of your swing, right? And then you go flying through the air, and that's a marvelous feeling, is it not? But what? Then you got to crash into the ground, right? So that kind of crashing, youngsters can actually compress this epiphyseal plate and damage their bones when they do that. All right, so that could be a concern for you when you're on your swing set. And also, I know that when young people are in a baseball league, when they're really young, sometimes we call that little league, and there's a pitcher, right? A pitcher is told never to throw a curveball or a screwball, because in order to throw a curveball, you got to put a lot of spin on the ball, so you got to really twist your bones in your arm, and that can damage this epiphyseal plate. What they're told to throw is just a fastball. And a fastball is a motion that is just straight. There's no curve on the ball. So there's no twisting of bones when you throw a fastball. That's great for developing players, but no twisting, no fancy kind of pitches, right, because of this epiphyseal plate. All right, well, let's zoom in to this area right here. And I can see some bone on this. We'll look at this. Here's the periosteum on the outside. Here is some solid bone. We call this compact bone. But what region of the bone is this located on? The cortex or the medulla? Right here. the cortex, right, the superficial part. So compact bone and cortical bone are the same thing. Then if we get deeper inside the bone, what part of the bone is this, cortex or medulla? Medulla. So sometimes we call this medullary bone. And it's not solid. It is made up of all of these trabeculae or plates. And so sometimes somebody might refer to that as trabecular bone as well. Medullary bone, trabecular bone, spongy bone all mean the same thing. And then, of course, you have bone marrow that fill all of these different spaces up. On the inside of all of these spaces, including the medullary cavity, there is another membrane. The periosteum surrounds the outside of the bone. The membrane that surrounds all these spaces on the inside is called the endosteum. So if I said endosteum, could you tell me, where is it located? What organ is it located in? Endosteum. And how could you know? Because look at that word. Osteum means bone. All right, so endosteum, you've got to know it's in a bone because it says right there. And endo means on the inside. Right, endosteum on the inside. And some more yellow bone marrow right there. There are some fibers that connect the periosteum to this cortical surface of the bone. They're called perforating or Sharpie's fibers right here because we don't want that membrane sliding around. And then here are some blood vessels that go into the bone. These right here are nutrient arteries, and these holes in a bone are what we call nutrient foramen or foramina. Right, one is a foramen, many of them are foramina. So if this bone needs blood, you could probably tell me something about this bone. Is it dead or alive? It's alive, that's right. What about this column that I have in the room right here? Is that dead or alive? It's dead, it's just concrete. Perform some of the same kind of functions of bone, but our bones are alive, right? So there are living cells inside bone. And you know the name of those cells? It's going to have something osteum on there. They're called osteocytes, right? Osteocytes, I think we went over that in lab. All right, so maybe we could find an osteocyte someplace. Can we find an osteocyte? Oh, we're getting really close. Okay, I think this is about as good as we can. Oh, this is even better. Okay, so here we've cut a nice longitudinal section of a bone in your thigh. That's your femur. And so you see spongy bone right here? Indeed. Or trabecular bone? Or medullary bone? One or the other. Right? And you can use any of those words even in the same sentence and people should know what you're talking about. And then over here, this is, what kind of bone is this here? Compact bone. Cortical bone. You guys are all right. Same thing. Right? Okay, so one term is more by location, and the other term, like compact, is a little bit more descriptive of what kind of bone it is. And when you look at compact bone, do you see any kind of shape in particular? Is there any kind of shape that sticks out at you? You see these circles right here? Okay, circles, anybody see circles? Okay, I see them. All right, so this is actually a tube. Inside of a tube, inside of another one. These are what we call lamellae, right? They're just layers, layer upon layers. And the design of this thing, all these different layers, make up a long tube. Okay, do you see a tube right through here? And here are some tubes that are made up of the different lamellae. And tubes are especially strong structures that resist compression, right? It's very difficult to compress a tube. Like, for instance, I'm going to steal your pen for a second, or your pencil, okay? So here's a tube, right? If I take the ends of this pencil and try to break the pencil by pushing down from end to end, and I'm not going to do it because what would happen? I would just push this pencil right through my hand probably before it breaks. But if I try to bend it side to side, it will be relatively easy to break. So these tube structures resist compression forces. Right? Tubes resist compression. That's one really nice thing about a tube. And what do we know about this bone? I see a tube. It's inside of another tube. And these two tubes are inside of another tube. Right? So it's not just one tube, but it's tubes inside of a tube, inside of a tube, inside of a tube. And then you got all these tubes next to each other. And then look at this. Surrounding all these tubes inside tubes that are next to tubes, you have what? More tubes. All right, so I think you should probably get the idea that the structure of a tube resists compression, right? That's the beauty of bone. Okay, so this thing right here is all these tubes inside tubes. This one group of circles right here is what we call an osteon. Oh, this is it right here. Here's an osteon, and it's made up of all these different lamellae. And on the inside, we call that the central canal or haversian canal. It's got blood vessels and it's got a nerve, so it's got veins and arteries and a nerve. And that feeds, brings nutrients to all of the living cells or osteocytes that we see inside bone. All right, a couple different kinds of lamellae. These that make up an osteon are called concentric lamellae. Concentric lamellae. The lamina that move all the way around the bone are called circumferential lamellae. So circumferential are larger diameter tubes that surround all of these osteons that are made of concentric lamellae. All right, I can see here. So when you break a bone, there's something good about bone and there's something bad. All right, can anybody see what might happen if you fracture this bone? What could happen? Could be deadly, as a matter of fact. So when the bone breaks, what else is going to break? All these blood vessels. That's right. Bone is a living tissue. It's highly vascular, right? There's blood. So when you fracture a bone, it's going to bleed. And you can bleed to death, as a matter of fact, if it's a big enough bone and you don't have medical attention, right? So that's the downside of bone. But the good thing about bone is that if you live through that episode, it heals rapidly because of that nutrient supply of blood to it, right? So bones can rebuild themselves probably in about 4 or 6 weeks. That's really fast, okay? And then the bone will probably even be stronger than what it was before. And so here I can see the periosteum with these perforating fibers, Sharpie's fibers. These, okay, central canals, are what we call central canals, and then there's some that come off at a perpendicular angle to the central canal. Sometimes we call these perforating canals or Volkmann's canals. Volkmann's, so perforating canals are perpendicular to the central canal of a haversian system. Oh, and there's probably a more popular name for haversian system, and that is an osteon. How do you know that an osteon has something to do with bone? Because it's got osteo in there, right? And so if I think of something that puts bone together, especially compact or cortical bone, right, there's a structural and functional unit that cortical bone is made out of. And that structural and functional unit is called an osteon. And if you know something about that osteon, you know how everything about compact bone, how it's put together. So what are some things about an osteon? Well, it's got these circumferential lamellae. It's got the central canal with blood vessels and a nerve. And then I see some other things in there. Let me see if I can find some, there it is right there. All right, so let me go back. So we're going to zoom in to just one little wedge of an osteon, all right, and blow it up and take a look. All right, so can you see this is like just one little wedge of that tube, and you can see the different lamellae. So I got 1, 2, 3, 4 different layers of tubes inside of tubes, and there's the nucleus of a cell, and this cell is in a little bubble or a pit that we call a lacunae, right? Because a cell can't live in solid bone. There's got to be a little space for that cell to exist. And so tell me, what's the name of this cell right here that we see in bone? Osteocyte inside a lacunae. And this is a living cell, so it needs nutrients from this artery right here, and those nutrients can't get through bone, but they can travel through all these connections between lacunae. These are called canaliculi. They're little canals. They're not really fractures, but they belong there so that material can move, like oxygen, from this artery into the first layer, and second layer, third layer, right, to bring oxygen to these osteocytes, and also remove waste products like carbon dioxide, for instance. All right, so I see concentric lamellae. I see lacunae with an osteocyte in it, and there is a nice nucleus of that osteocyte. And all of these lacunae are connected together by canaliculi that allows for diffusion of material. So if we look at this whole circular structure, that would be an osteon. And remember that osteon is the structural and functional unit of compact bone, solid bone. And what's another name for a compact bone? Cortical bone. Wonderful. As a matter of fact, usually we talk about it in terms of cortical bone more often than compact bone, because it's very descriptive where we would find that. All right. Okay. What else we got? Let me go to next kind of slide. These are probably pretty easy to see underneath the microscope. All right. Let's talk about some chemical composition of bones. Well, if we look at chemical composition, we can break everything that makes a bone up into two different kinds of chemicals. Some are organic compounds and some are inorganic compounds. If it's an organic compound, cells are made out of organic compounds, and even fibers inside of our body are organic compounds. So in terms of organic compounds, you have an osteocyte. An osteocyte is a cell that we see in mature bone. So after bones are mature, they reach the right length and width, right? Then those cells inside lacuna are called osteocytes. But before your skeleton is complete, right, there's a cell called an osteoblast. And the job of an osteoblast is to build bone. Right, so its job is to deposit more matrix into deposit more material into the matrix. And sometimes we find an osteoprogenitor cell, and this is a kind of cell that can differentiate between osteoblasts, osteocytes, and even a third kind, an osteoclast. And these osteoprogenitor cells usually don't hang out in an osteon, but we can find these in the membranes inside the bone or on the outside. All right, so I see a bone cell that is in mature bone called an osteocyte, and then I see osteoblast and osteoclast, and if we look at the function of these two, one builds bone, the other breaks bone down. And these are working all the time in your body, right? And so what could you tell me? What's the relationship between an osteoblast and an osteoclast? Okay, I mentioned it in anatomy. We'll really pay close attention to it because I think it's really one of the most important concepts in anatomy, but also especially in physiology. Right? So these things, they work against each other, right? We call these antagonism, right? So the osteoblast is antagonistic to an osteoclast, and that might seem kind of futile. Why do we have things that work in opposition to each other in the body? What's the purpose of that? Okay. So think of your car. Do you have any mechanisms in your car that are exactly opposite each other? But you wouldn't dream of driving your car without these two things that work in opposition to each other. They are the gas pedal and brake pedal. One makes the car go fast, the other one slows it down. Right? So that principle is very important for controlling different aspects of your body as well. Right, so something will speed something up in your body, the other will slow it down, and when these two things get mixed together, what you have is something that is in precise control and balance. Right, so antagonism provides for precise control and balance, and you want to have that precise control and balance inside your skeletal system so that you don't have osteoporosis taking place. You want to maintain your skeleton just right. Right, so antagonism in terms of control systems is a beautiful thing. It's good, right? It doesn't have any negative connotation to it. It's actually a very important kind of concept. All right, so those are the cells. Blast builds, clast breaks it down. And if one of these cells gets more active than the other, say for instance, if an osteoclast is busier than the osteoblast, and then you start to lose bone as a result of that. So somebody that has osteoporosis, there's some imbalance between these two kinds of cells that we're all still trying to discover and work out so that we don't have osteoporosis anymore. All right, so those are the cells. And then fibers are part of the organic part of bone. And probably the most important one is collagen, right? That's the strongest one. So let's look at the slide on the right. Here I see some concentric labellae, and these lines represent collagen fibers. they're sort of oriented from top to bottom or longitudinal, right? But each lamellae, what can you tell me about the orientation of these collagen fibers? Like this one here and this one here. Are they parallel to each other? This one and this one? They are not. They're perpendicular to each other. And so what this allows is that it gives some, the collagen gives some extra strength to the bone in the sense that these collagen fibers will resist twisting. The another name for twisting force is torsion. And remember, collagen doesn't stretch, so collagen resists tension as well. Right? So torsion and tension are resisted due to these collagen fibers. Sometimes you can get some artificial wood products that are made in layers. And in order to make that sheet of wood really strong by different layers, guess what somebody can do to make that sheet of wood really strong? Wood has a certain grain or pattern to it. You want to align all of those patterns in wood so that they're the same? Or would that piece of wood, when all the sheets are put together, would it be stronger if you change the orientation of the grain so that they're perpendicular to each other? Should they all be lined up parallel or perpendicular from one sheet to the next? Perpendicular to each other. So those of you that have used plywood, you would notice that, right? The grains in wood and plywood are perpendicular to each other. That gives that wood a really nice strength. As a matter of fact, in tires, there are various belts, and they could have metal filaments and fibers in them. And guess what the orientation is in a tire from one layer to the next? The fibers are perpendicular to each other. That gives a tire its strength, right? So collagen is important. It has all these different orientations. It resists twisting, which we call torsion, and stretching, which is what we call tension. All right, so that is these collagen fibers. And you know collagen to be really, really strong. All right, so here we got stretching. Here we got twisting. What's another force that bones are really good in resisting? So it's not only twisting, not only tension, but compression. Well, collagen won't help with that. So there's got to be another component to bone, and that's the inorganic component. That inorganic component is made up of different minerals, right? Sometimes we call these mineral salts, and they're called hydroxyapatite. And hydroxyapatite is made of calcium and inorganic phosphate, and then these things are put together to form various kinds of crystals. Like calcium phosphate, you see the formula here, or hydroxyapatite. Here is the official formula. You got 10 calciums and 6 inorganic phosphates and a couple hydroxyl groups, right? So it just takes this basic building block like calcium, inorganic phosphate, puts them all together, and it makes something that resists compression. So this is the part that can withstand great weight. You don't have to know these chemical formulas in here. I don't think you even have to know that Ca stands for calcium or P stands for phosphorus or O for oxygen or any of that stuff, right? But you should at least know calcium and phosphate are inorganic compounds in bones. And why are they there? They resist compression, okay? And that's where that column right there comes into play. It's filled with concrete. Concrete resists compression really nice. But if for something were to happen and the building were to shake in a certain way to where the ceiling was raised, right, then that column right there can't resist what we call that pulling force? Tension. Concrete cannot resist tension whatsoever. It crumbles. All right, so that's why earthquakes can be so dangerous. These pillars of concrete are great for holding a building up, but if it starts to stretch, guess what happens to the pillars? They crumble. All right, unless there's something in there like fibers or other kinds of cables that hold that column together. And does anybody ever make anything out of concrete? What do we put in concrete so that it does resist tension a little bit?
Rebar.
Yeah, there's rebar in there, which are like big, strong cables. Okay, and the rebar also resists twisting a little bit. Okay, so that's the organic and inorganic part. Organic and inorganic mixture together, right? So we put organic and inorganic components or compounds together in a bone, right? Then that bone can resist twisting, compression, and tension all at the same time. But if one of those components is missing, then that bone can be damaged pretty easily by one or the other of these different kinds of tensions. All right, microscopic structure bones, guess what? We looked at all these things already. What do I want to point out to you? Oh, look, here's concentric lamellae. Here is circumferential lamellae. Right, so the ones, what kind of lamellae make up an osteon, like I see right here? Concentric or circumferential? These are the concentric lamellae, because there's one inside the other, and then the lamina that surround the whole bone are what we call circumferential. Circumferential all the way around. So let's see, where did I have a nice picture of a bone? I think this is probably pretty good. Nope, I don't see what I'm looking for. Yeah, perfect, look at this. All right, so these lamellae that make up an osteon, these are what we call concentric lamellae. And then the ones that, these tubes that surround the whole bone over here are circumferential. So these are concentric, these over here are circumferential lamellae. Okay, I like that. All right, so what's the structural and functional unit of compact bone called? What is this thing here called? Actually, on this diagram it is this right here. This is an osteon. That's right. So if you know how this osteon is put together with the osteocytes and canaliculi and lacunae, you know pretty much everything about this, how this whole bone is put together. So it's a structural and functional unit of compact bone. Not spongy bone, but at least for compact or cortical bone. Okay, well, we've got a little time to talk about bone formation and growth. And there's two kinds of bone formation. There's intramembranous and endochondrial. Have you ever heard of endochondrial, endochondrium? How about periosteum? You've heard of periosteum. What about endochondrium? That is inside the bone. That's right. So that's one kind of process where bones are made. We call it, when a bone is made, we call that ossification. Right? Some bones grow from membranes. Okay? We call that intramembranous ossification. Some examples of bones that do that are flat bones that make up the skull. Even though they're a little bit curved, they're mostly flat. During development, there's just a membrane there in the head, and then that membrane ossifies, which means what? It turns into solid bone, turns into the skull. Right? So most bones of the skull arise from intramembranous ossification. And can you remember the name of a cell that makes bone matrix, makes bone hard, that builds bone up? That is a osteoblast, right? So there are osteoblasts in that membrane. And then after the skull is formed, those osteoblasts then become osteocytes because they don't have to build bone anymore. At birth, the skull is not completely formed. There are still membranes in the skull. And those are called fontanelles or soft spots. Ooh, do I have a picture? That'd be really great if I had a picture of a fontanelle someplace. Or these soft spots. Okay, there's a nice fetus right there. Maybe when I get to axial skeleton, but let me just show you this real quick. Those of you who have been to lab, you know this is the frontal bone, here's parietal, here's occipital, and look at this area right here. There's no bone right there. There's a membrane, and that's what we call a fontanelle. And is a membrane stronger or solid bone stronger? Solid bone is a lot stronger. So these fontanelles, right, don't protect the neonate's brain or the fetal brain at all, and you just have to be aware of that because they can be punctured very easily. They can be ripped apart very easily from tension, or even twisting can damage these fontanelles, which can damage the brain inside the infant's skull. So these fontanelles are not very strong. And how long does a fontanelle last after somebody's born? This is important to know. Okay, blows me away when I learn this. I thought maybe they'd be there for a couple months at the most. They're there for 2 years. And the reason why they're there is twofold. This skull right here is really large. And it would be really difficult for this skull to fit through the birth canal, which would be part of the cervix and vagina, right? So these fontanelles are there so that the fetal skull can actually squish down during parturition. That's an important thing, right? And then when the baby pops out, then the skull kind of goes back to its original shape, kind of. But they probably still look a little squishy head when they first are born. Okay, the other thing is, bones can't grow very fast compared to nervous system. When somebody is born, the brain grows very, very rapidly. And as a matter of fact, they might look a little strange because little babies have these really big heads and kind of small body because their brains are growing so fast. If they had a completely formed skull, it would compress and restrict the growth of somebody's brain. And so because those membranes are there, the brain can grow really, really fast like it should, and the skull will get stretched out to accommodate that growth. So for those two reasons, fontanelles are really important. Okay, the downside is that they're not very strong. To what? Compression, puncturing, and even twisting. Yeah. And the fontanelles, that's right, they ossify from both sides, okay, from this anterior side and posterior side. They grow together like that, and that's what forms a suture. There are a couple places, there are actually two frontal bones, right and left, and actually that suture completely ossifies across. Yeah, but in most cases, they form a suture, which is an immovable joint inside the skull, which you're going to look at in lab. All right, so intramembranous ossification in these bones. But in long bones, right, it's endochondrial. When you hear that word chondrium, chondrocyte, you should think of cartilage. Yeah. So these bones, these long bones, are made out of cartilage first, and then osteoblasts enter that cartilage model and start to ossify the bone from the inside. That is endochondrial ossification. All right, so what do we know about endochondrial? Oh, before I go, fontanelles. There's a breed of dogs that have fontanelles their whole life. Does anybody know a breed of dogs? And that is, you know, they're probably solid. Everything in them is solid after a while. So it's a Chihuahua. Okay, a little tiny, tiny skull like that. Okay, have fontanelles, so you kind of have to be careful with Chihuahuas that way. I've never heard of any problems, but I've got big dogs at home, and I always thought it'd be really cool to have like a really big, massive dog and then have a little tiny dog next to it playing around, and then I thought, oh, it might not be really good for the Chihuahua, right, because they don't really have a skull. And that skull might fit in the mouth of the dog that I have at home, so that wouldn't be a good idea. Okay, endochondrial ossification. And again, ossification means formation of bone from a cartilage model, and that cartilage is hyaline cartilage. And let's look at a primary and secondary ossification center. All right, let's take a look at that. How does that happen? Wow, this cursor is really hard to work today. All right, I want to show you this. Okay, so here's a small bone, and it's mostly made out of cartilage. All right, so this is endochondrial ossification. And I see that all of a sudden there starts to be a ring forming around the bone that I see right here. Okay, and then on the inside I see another area of ossification right here. All right, so this is how a bone develops. This thing, this ring is called a bone collar. So this is how a bone grows in diameter. So this bone starts to get thicker and thicker and thicker because there are osteoblasts here. Then on the inside, bone starts to form. Again, that's an osteoblast activity on the center. And then as the bone grows a little bit bigger, look, a cavity is starting to form. All right, so the bone collar gets bigger and bigger due to osteoblasts. What kind of bone cell produces this cavity on the inside? The osteoclast. That's right, the osteoclast. Okay, so this bone gets thicker in diameter because of growth of cells due to osteoblasts in the collar, but also due to osteoclasts that are inside the medullary cavity. That kind of growth is what we call oppositional growth. So bone grows in diameter by oppositional growth that we see right here. So that's in diameter. Now what about length? The length of a bone is determined by what we call secondary ossification centers near the epiphyses, here and here. And so there are osteoblasts that start to lay down bone, okay, and then finally this secondary ossification center gets bigger and bigger and bigger and starts to bump up this primary ossification center, and look what's left over. This line of cartilage separating the primary ossification center from the secondary, and these are the cells right here that can produce more bone. And this is a plate over the epiphysis, so we call that the epiphyseal plate. And so the two epiphyseal plates allow this bone to grow in, not diameter, but in length, right, due to these epiphyseal plates. All right, so I think that's all I wanted to say about bone growth. But remember, bone is highly vascular, so it can repair itself very quickly, right? And that happens in about 4 to 5 weeks, something like that. All right, sign-in sheet is going around. Make sure you sign the sign-in sheet, and I'll miss you guys on Wednesday. But I wish you all well.